Every comedy sequel cashes in on repeating the same formula with barely any twists. At least this one admits it, and straight up wallows in it. It's 22 Jump Street, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America, and I'm here with a pair of impossibly ornate automobiles. I don't know. I didn't
like
want to make
checkers,
one of you Ducky. I didn't want to make one of you Ducky and one of you Blaine. That was the obvious thing.
Got
yeah,
it.
That's
Annie Potts twice.
Annie Potts twice.
That was Camilla Adams.
Everything is just Ducky.
And before that was Robin Hitchcock.
Try a little tenderness.
We were just saying before the recording began, there have been three rounds of response on social media to the Pretty in Pink episode. One is, why do I accidentally imply that people are dead who are not? So I will try not to do that this week.
It's an untapped talent. There's got to be some way to monetize it, Sean.
You know, it's like a silver lining for bad news. It's like, I'm sorry you've lost your grandmother's car. You've lost her car.
Right.
That's better. That's bad, but it's better than what you thought I was saying.
Exactly.
Right? One was just, man, high school and feelings, which, yeah, everyone gets to do that.
It's always a thing. No matter what, like, yeah, everybody's got some sort of strong emotion, I would imagine, whether it be positive or negative to high school. Yeah.
And then the other one, I'm sorry, I can't find the comment right now, but it was from our friend Christopher. I believe he said that the car, Andy's car, was like a 50s Karmann Ghia. He actually owns one that he is trying to turn into Andy's car, but said that in 1985, it would have cost her about $1,500. That's less than I thought, but reading the movie, I still don't know how Andy had $1,500 for a vanity auto purchase.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to jive with what we're to believe her circumstances, their financial circumstances are.
Having a car at all.
Right, exactly. Like $1,500, like in 80 whatever, like that's I would still imagine it's a lot for a high school student now. In her circumstances.
Then I guess it's $3,400. I like to check out the inflation calculator almost every time I watch a movie, as you may recall from the $8.59 milkshake. That's my guess. And I'm going to go right now because I can't not.
Right, exactly. Right. It's just going to be looming.
The point is, that's a lot of working at the record store.
Right. What,
from like, the size of this town, like a bike would do, you know.
Plus, like what? Minimum wage was what? $3 back then?
$3,542.12.
That's a great guesstimate.
I never had that in high school. I don't remember having $1,000 in my bank account in high school. If I had $400, it was like, man, what am I going to do?
Right. Exactly.
Should I go on vacation? I can't. I'm a teenager anyway.
I'm going to take 1/10 of a college course.
Right. Well, apologies if our lukewarm reaction to Pretty in Pink somehow crushed the emotional core within you. It landed 44th overall, a mediocre ass 44th on our big chart, 58 1/3, directly below Pain and Gain, directly above GoldenEye. That is not a ringing endorsement. 7 is still in 7. But this week, a comedy sequel that I mostly forgot and was generally delighted by, not to give it away. Where were you both coming in on the world of Jump Street?
I know, on the world of Jump Street, because...
The Jump Street cinematic universe.
Okay, yes. I was going to say, because...
Did you watch the show?
Yes, Mama was alive,
okay.
And...
Be aware and alive.
Yes, Mama was alive and very much into Jump Street, the show, and very much into, you know, Johnny Depp at the time, but... Very much into our one Richard Grieco when he joined the cast.
He's good looking.
He was.
Like, he was. Yes. His face kind of He has that face where it's like, oh, you've clearly lived a life now.
Yeah. Oh,
he could still get it.
I don't know. I saw him at a convention over a year ago, and I did not go. I was going to go get an autograph, and then I saw him. I like got close, and I was like, that seems like a sad situation. I don't want to mess up.
I'm basing this on his cameo in this one.
Right. Yeah. Like. In 2014, he was still like, he was on that cusp right there. But back in 2019 when I saw him? Nah.
But a lot can happen in 5 years.
Yeah.
With the addition of a frequently cited bloated budget that had an investment in making him up to look like himself.
Right.
In 2014.
Exactly. And also, I have seen both of these movies before, and I had forgotten how much I enjoyed the second. I remember really liking the first one, and I had forgotten how much I enjoyed the sequel. Like this, there were so many laugh out loud moments for me. Like I was into it.
I feel exactly the same way. I remember really liking the first one. I remember this one more as a, okay, fine. And it, you know what? Like it is good. This is a fun movie that I enjoyed.
Yeah. I was blown away by the first one only because it felt like, why does this exist? And why would I think it would be good? There's, you know, action comedies, buddy action comedies yet are a dime a dozen. And I kind of went into it like, I'm sure it'll have some laughs. And then it was so good. And this one kind of just got lost in the shuffle. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm laughing at everything they're doing. Yeah. That doesn't happen that often.
And I think what really got me the most is how self-aware this movie is, like how you mentioned in the top of the show, is that, you know, how it just like talks about we're gonna do exactly the same thing, you know, when they poke fun at everything, like, oh, that was 21 Jump Street, now we're directly across the street at literally 22 Jump Street, and next year we'll probably be at 23 Jump Street, the new construction happening. Yep. So it's stuff like that that really got to me, that I really enjoyed.
Like, clearly I was rooting for them, but they earned it, I think. Like, there are things like Jonah Hill saying, look at the captain's office. It's like a giant cube of ice.
Yes.
That in a lot of movies, I'd be like, ugh. But here I'm like, yeah, that's what that guy's name is. You keep being cute, movie. Like,
I like the meat cute. You drop a Q-tip on my meat.
I love the whole introduction of that, and he was like, this seems like an odd time to be Q-tipping.
Had to get to that bit.
Right.
Or the throwaway Benjamin Hill Institute of Film Studies. Yes. Like everyone's like,
so I'm absolutely sure I missed that the first time around. But
yes.
Well, let me tell you what happens in this movie as much as anyone needs to know. And I'm sure the movie agrees with me. It's my 60-second recap. Somebody tell me when to go.
Go.
It's the first movie again, but at college, Schmidt and Jenko screw up an exotic animals bust and get assigned into the newly upgraded 22 Jump Street program, where Ice Cube tasks them with infiltrating Metropolitan City State College and rooting out the source of a new street drug. Jenko thrives, forming of a bromance and joining the football team. Schmidt struggles to fit in, but starts dating a young art major who turns out to be Ice Cube's daughter, giving us the film's best sequence featuring 95% Ice Cube stink eye. Schmidt and Jenko aren't getting along. Jenko is thinking about transferring to another school to keep playing football. The other cops bust the psychology professor, but it wasn't him. It was Jillian Bell, who has been calling Jonah Hill old throughout the movie. They follow her to spring break, foil her plan, blow up a helicopter, and tease the next 15 sequels in the movie's second best sequence.
All right, you finished with 12 seconds to spare. And I have to say that the end credits of this film responsible for around 15 points in my score.
Absolutely.
And I was trying to think of other movies where the end credits are the best part. I know I feel that way about Super 8. It's you see the movie that the children make.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. I just remembered Don't Bring Me Down playing.
I know that there are other movies on that list, but I can't remember what they are. So I was hoping either of you could think of some.
Tropic Thunder had some pretty good end credits.
Do they show you the fake movies that they keep talking about?
The fake movies are at the beginning of Tropic Thunder, but their end credits is just like, you know, Tom Cruise dancing around to Ludacris, I think it is. And then there's also just like everybody's like little shots, little reaction shots of things. And also just like Matthew McConaughey, I think, still like lurking around in the jungle or something.
Right.
But that is one that pops into my head.
Well, Wonder Woman 84 in the mid-credits scene was easily the best scene in the film.
Right.
That's not really what I mean. I don't mean mid-credits scenes. I mean what's going on while the names appear.
Right.
I think we could come up with a lot of examples, and most of them would be bad movies, since it's a hallmark of comedies that weren't that funny to play the blooper reel and get the laughs that way, right?
Yeah.
Like, I just saw that really awful Buddy Games. Dax Shepard's in it, and Nick Swardson, and probably some other people. Ooh. And because it's not funny at any point, generally likable people screwing up their lines is the funniest thing about the entire movie. And that happens from time to time. Even Horrible Bosses. Horrible Bosses is pretty good, but it has one of the best blooper reels I've ever seen.
It is pretty good.
Listeners, tell us if you think of other movies that have credit sequences that outshine the rest of the film. Although, Sean, you are absolutely right that scene with Ice Cube just giving the stink eye.
My God.
It's just so good.
So at the buffet, at the lunch?
It,
the whole thing.
It's really, it's really twice. It's the buffet at the lunch with him getting mad at the buffet and attacking it. And but more than that, when Channing Tatum puts together what happened and runs around for a good 45 seconds talking about how horribly awkward the moment is and high-fiving
everyone. Right, this is the funniest thing that has ever happened.
It's beautiful as he like skips around Schmidt, but kept his daughter.
I mean, I think that the whole thing like underlying this movie that makes it good is joy. This is just a joyful movie where everybody's having a good time and they aren't taking anything seriously. Right. And so the audience can too.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not a lot of like you were saying, like some of those jokes like could have just been like real wonky and fallen flat. And just felt like, come on. But for some reason, it all plays. Like everything lands. Everybody has like this great comedic timing. It delivers like right on the money. Like they've got it down, and it's just like yes, I am here for all of this. Like Ice Cube, fucking hell. And then just like Queen Latifah is her mom. Like
another movie where it's like, Queen Latifah, you are too good for this, but I'll take it.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Now we say that and we defend her, but did any of us stick around after the Super Bowl to watch her Equalizer TV show? Because I sure didn't.
I didn't.
That implies I watched the Super Bowl. Which
right. Yeah. And I didn't even know until like a couple weeks ago that it existed. Like I heard about a new Equalizer show and I was like, And then I randomly came across the trailer. I was like, is that Queen Latifah as the Equalizer? Yeah. Like I am intrigued, but I don't know.
I am intrigued. I do think I will get around to it. I really like her hairstyle.
Yeah.
And I love her. She's the best. So.
Yeah. And it's definitely.
I'm seriously bad at watching current television shows. Yeah. Sorry, what were you saying, Camila?
No, it's just like, I don't know. I'm just afraid that it's going to go wrong. And I don't want to have that marred image of Queen Latifah. Like I remember watching the original Equalizer when I was a little with my mom, and like my mom was really into it. I mean, not like, oh, there's going to be worse than that, because I really can't tell you how great the quality of the original was. But I just don't want this to be like, oh, Latifah.
Yeah.
Well, before too many more tangents, or this then gets me onto a rant about how we don't need a Silence of the Lambs reboot TV series about Clarice that tells the same story. Never mind. Here are the Factsy segment. Here's the Factsy segment. 22 Jump Street was released June 13th, 2014, the 18th number one movie of the year. Won its opening weekend with $57 million. Beat fellow new release How to Train Your Dragon 2. Which was kind of close in second, 49.4 million. A 1 week number one movie fell to second the following week, 27.4 million, behind the debuting Think Like a Man 2. Big run of sequels there. Spent 6 weeks in the top 10, $191.7 million, 14th overall for 2014. And that's a bit better than 21 Jump Street. which was released in March of 2012, opened to $36.3 million, $138.4 total. Also a one-week number one, but only 21st for the year. So this built on the success of the original, which means it's time for our occasional recurring segment. Why haven't they done another one yet? Well, for a while, the plan was a crossover of this series and Men in Black.
Ooh.
Wait. What?
The next thing planned.
What in the Tommy Westfall?
The next thing planned was going to be called MIB23, and was close to pre-production. This was one of the things that was revealed during the Sony hack, that their secret plan, which they hadn't revealed yet, was that they were going to cross these characters in this franchise with Men in Black.
Are we sure that they didn't do this as a decoy in case they got hacked by North Korea? It's like, throw things at the dartboard. All right, we're gonna blend Transformers and Care Bears. Go.
I acknowledge that sounds more realistic than the truth. No, there was a script. There were people attached. This was going to happen. It got lost in the wreckage after the hack, and I think was eventually formally canceled. There was a rumored direct sequel. The closest thing now is a spinoff with Tiffany Haddish and Awkwafina in the main roles. Mm. That's the closest thing to having a recent update. It was given a new title, Jump Street, colon, Now for Her Pleasure. Mm-hmm. And they said there was some news about it in November of 2020. So if anything happens, it looks like it's going to be that.
I'm not comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I mean, at what point does doing a all-female reboot somehow still feel icky? I don't know.
Like, why can't it be its own thing? Just like where they, you know, with the Ocean's 8, and you know, it was really very unimportant that she had to be related to Danny Ocean at all. And you know, this, and then like, what is it that there's a TV show with Gabrielle Union and Jessica Alba that's like the Bad Boys? It's a spinoff of Bad Boys, I think.
Huh.
Like, why can't it just be its own thing? Why does it have to be a spinoff or a reboot?
Get people to pay attention to it is the cynical answer. I don't know. I kind of like, if we're going to make everything nostalgia-rooted entertainment, right? If we've given up on original properties, then I want to include original properties reimagined with non-white dude casts. But I also think that's not... Why don't we just reject the original premise and just, like Camila said, do new things?
Because it's not fair. Because it's already like starting with a foot on their neck. Because it's like, you know, somebody's like, because like I just said about the Equalizer, like, you know, and you know, and I'm guilty of it. It's like, without it being the Equalizer, now with a black woman in the lead as the Equalizer, it's not, now it's in my mind. It's like, okay, I'm comparing it to the original and to the movie. And it's like, it's not fair. It's not right.
Right.
Like, if it's a standalone, if it's just like fucking, hey, Queen Latifah is this badass cop who's doing her shit or whatever her actual job is, you know, then it's like, okay, now I'm into it. Let's see what's going on. I have nothing to compare it to. So it's just, right. I don't know.
Well, and as we're seeing with Ghostbusters, you know, if you plant your flag that we're doing it, but with women, and it's about that is its reason for existing, there's a backlash, which is bullshit. But then 3 years later, someone does another one that's not that, and you've created, you know, you've created a cycle of push and pull over the gender in the franchise, when it's like, just make a good movie that is naturally balanced and representative, you know?
Right. It's not... I don't want to be held to the white man terrorists of the internet, though. And I am glad that the Lady Ghostbusters exists. I enjoyed that movie so much.
Same. Love that one. I do too.
If they just started with whatever bullshit will eventually come out that they made, then we wouldn't have Lady Ghostbusters, right? Like, they're gonna reboot things.
Right.
They're gonna rehash old IP constantly. Why not shake it up in some ways. I don't know. I agree with both.
No, it's like,
you.
it's a very, it's kind of a mixed bag, and you're right.
Yes.
Like it's definitely got its pros and its cons. It's on the one hand,
yeah,
it's so it's
though.
All right. On the one hand, it's not fair to help, you know, have this comparison to the original of all the things. And that goes for just about anything really. But then it's also like, okay, great. Now we get to see like what a black woman in this role would look like, mm-hmm. as opposed to like some old British white dude. So yeah, I mean, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying I want it to happen all the time. I don't want you to call the movie Jump Street Now for Her Pleasure. Like
yeah.
when you, you know, put a lampshade on what you're doing, mm-hmm. you not only do you invite, you know, a thing to begin in the discourse, you're also like, I don't know, it feels like, because this is the most, isn't this the most notable thing about our project? That unlike everything else, we have women.
Yeah.
Look at us and how, you know.
It makes it feel icky. And it's also, it's like, you know, it's like the version of, it's like the gender reveal. It's like, you know, it's, and now we have a blue one and we have a pink one. So now, you know, that's kind of what it feels like.
Anyway, that's it. Good casting. I'll watch it. I'm sure it'll be funny. The TV series aired on the then infant Fox Network for 5 seasons and 103 episodes between 1987 and 1991. Camila, was it good?
What was it? 1985?
87 and 91.
87. I was 11. Between, yes, it was good. Like I was between the ages of
11,
right,
perspective.
Exactly. I was like between the ages of 11 and like 14, like with a bunch of hot boys on the TV screen. Yes, it was very good. Like I think I may have tried to revisit it about maybe 10 years ago or something, and it's fine. It was fine. I didn't stick with it. I didn't continue to go through. But you know, they touched a lot of the things of like, you know, drugs are bad and, you know, sex and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, that was a lot of the whole thing of, you know, runaway teens and, you know, whatever was plaguing America's youth in the 80s. That was a lot of the hot topics that were going on. I think we may have had an interracial romance or a hint of an interracial romance on screen, which was probably one of the first ones that I saw on television.
Yeah.
And as a noted white boy enthusiast, probably very formative.
Yes. Yes, it it left a mark. It was definitely one of those, hey, I see myself kind of things now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it was good enough for sixth grader.
Speaking of, Ice Cube's daughter is way too pretty for Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah. And not even, like, there is no amount of, like, she was.
Box wine?
Right. Like, there's no way. Has it been years since you had sex? Or, I mean, I don't.
I mean, she's, like, 18. It's possible that this is brand new to her. And she's like, well, you know what I like? Sex.
Right.
Gonna keep doing it.
Right. Or just like, you know, or maybe I just want to knock this one out real quick and see what it's like. And also, he's not that interesting as to where it'd be like, oh my god, he's so smart, he's so funny, he's so great, he's so witty. I'm like, nah, it's not enough.
Yeah, the only runner that wore thin for me in this movie was him doing the yeah, I agree with what you just said, like I'm totally all
right
about the thing, because I want to impress you. Like that, they play that card 7 times and it's never that good,
right? But I do, I did enjoy his slam poetry.
Oh,
yeah,
God,
that and, man, does this movie know exactly what a college improv team looks like.
All right, hang on. I was like, is it time for me to go on my improv rant? Because I'm ready to go on my
I was waiting
rant.
For it.
For newer listeners, I work for a comedy theater, and I am the academy director there, which means that my whole life is about teaching people improv. So I'm defensive of it as an art form, although I was literally the day before I watched this movie talking to Sean about the Critics' Choice Awards and like how that is probably a thing where when people make fun of it, he's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
I
sure.
do feel that way.
Absolutely.
About improv, and I literally said that to him. I was like, yes, this is inherently make fun of a bull, but this is what I have to say. First of all, that's not what a college improv team looks like, because there were three women on stage and two men, and only one of them was white.
Okay, that's... Yeah.
Right.
I meant more their attire and general demeanor, but go on.
Correct. Second thing... Okay, I'm sorry. I'm getting way too worked up about this. But they are playing the game tagline, and the way that that game works is that you have two audience members in chairs with the players. And as the players are conducting their scene, they'll periodically tap the two players who have to say any word. Then it is the improviser's job to incorporate that. They use that word next in their dialogue, and it is their job to justify why they just said this random thing, right? So, you know what I'm really craving for breakfast this morning? Tap their shoulder. Penguins, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Now you have to justify being a person who eats penguins. That is the source of the comedy. Now, in 22 Jump Street, what occurs is that Channing Tatum gives them classic bad improv suggestions like dildo. And the guy responds, and this is also accurate. Yes, college improvisers in particular would be dicks to their audience member about this. But he says, no, you have to say something that makes sense. That is the exact opposite
That's
of the point of that game.
That's what I was thinking. Like, you're a bad improviser.
And this movie clearly, like, it's not one of those things where they are like, yeah, well, because college kids aren't good at improv, they haven't taken proper classes in UCB. No, these are people who, I mean, I don't actually know the history of the 55 writers who worked on this film, but they strike me as Harvard Lampoon types more so than improv types, and therefore they can fuck off and die. Okay. I'll probably have to edit that down because I just went on a tear.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
I knew what was coming when we had an improv scene. And although I will say that the little conversation that Channing Tatum has with them afterwards, where it's like, why don't you come up with something beforehand and like know that it's funny and then say that when you get on the stage? They're like, yeah, that's stand up. And he's like, yeah, you should do that. That's how I got into stand up. I had done improv for a while and I was like, man, sometimes the stuff I say out there isn't funny. It'd be good if I prepared something.
That joke is great.
Yes.
That's
yes.
what the joke should have been. Or it should have been them doing bad, boring improv, because that is abundant. Yeah. Anyway.
The Faxy segment.
we're still here.
Yeah. Oh, we're still here. There's some stuff. As indicated by the cameos in both this film and the previous, this and the series are in the same continuity. That's nice. That's nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like Charlie's Angels. They did that with Charlie's Angels.
Oh, did they?
Back to How Did This Get Made, a much more popular podcast. The reboot was in the works since 2008. There was a script floating around for it forever. Jonah Hill rewrote it. He was kind of the guy championing 21 Jump Street until it got done. Fortunately, his first choice to direct the film did not make it through development. For some reason, Jonah Hill really wanted Rob Zombie to handle this film.
I just want to hang out with Rob Zombie.
Right. Like, if you're just a Rob Zombie fanboy, just say it. And just get your agent to help to hook you up and to, like, have a day or two with Rob Zombie.
I'm still waiting to see what Rob Zombie is good for in the world of movies, but boy, am I sure it wasn't this.
No.
Moving on to expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Yes, for this movie, Channing Tatum won the MTV Movie Award for Best Comedic Performance. The film received another four nominations, including a richly deserved Best Villain nomination for Jillian Bell.
Yes.
She lost to Meryl Streep in Into the Woods. How frustrating must it be where you're even losing MTV Movie Awards to Meryl? Like, come on.
It's like, why is she even here? This is supposed to be, like, way below her.
And at the Critics' Choice Awards, it was nominated for Best Comedy. Channing Tatum was nominated for Best Actor in a Comedy. We nominate everybody! That's what Robin was alluding to a moment ago. Everyone gets a nomination. It lost to the Grand Budapest Hotel for Best Comedy that year. Very briefly, that the character of Zook is Wyatt Russell, son of Kurt Russell.
No!
I thought he looked familiar.
Baby Kurt Russell. He turned down a role in the Hunger Games series for this film.
Was it Finnick?
I don't know, but that feels right, doesn't it?
Okay.
Feels right.
I actually did find him quite charming. We'll talk about this and you can't handle the truth. It's exhausting how everyone is someone's kid.
That's true. And finally, I mentioned the Sony hack. One of the things that leaked during the Sony hack was just a bunch of emails, including Channing Tatum emailing Jonah Hill, Amy Pascal, a bunch of the other producers when the first weekend's box office returns came in, which were very good. At the time, it was the second highest weekend for an R-rated comedy, which is such an obscure list that it wouldn't even be worth me mentioning it here. But like in insider terms, that means you did very well.
Why is this rated R? Hang on. Continue. Put a pin in that.
Language.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you watched it on FX, yeah?
I watched it on FX. Did they cut out the language?
All the language was there. Anyway. So I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, Channing Tatum saw the box office returns and wrote, it had beat Ted for that mark. Ted was the previous second R-rated. So he just emailed everyone in all caps writing, F you, Ted, 4 exclamation points. Second of all time, biatch. Come on, Jump Streeters. We got Cate Blanchett with this box office, bitches. Ah, ha, 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 ha. And he writes it so long that it does that thing where it trails off the screen because he didn't put a space. So that's how Channing Tatum celebrates.
So I was going to say,
it doesn't surprise me.
It's so hard to imagine Channing Tatum sending an email. But now that you've read it.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, that's what I thought.
Also, isn't it Blanchett as opposed to Blanchett?
I don't know
what they say in this film.
I've been saying Blanchett, but I always tend to try to make names more fancy than they need to be. Like Angela.
Like Angela Bassett.
Yes, exactly.
On Vogue.
On Vogue. I always say Blanchett, but now I'm realizing that it's like I'm saying the thing that you use on a Ouija board, the planchette. Maybe that's why. Yeah, having alluded to it a minute ago, I think this is the first time that I was like, oh, Jillian Bell is one of the funniest people in the world. She's so good here.
She is. Mm-hmm. This is from the... Her delivery, my God, from the beginning is like, she's like, I'm 19. She's like 19 minutes late to Pinochle. Like her straight face through everything. And then the whole like fight scene, like, my God, she is so hilarious.
That scene where they keep going in to kiss accidentally is so well choreographed. And they perform it so perfectly. It's amazing.
Like, are you trying to Mr. or are we trying to Mr. and Mrs. Smith me? Like,
I do want to say one of the things that doesn't work for me in this movie, like, I wouldn't give up Jillian Bell's perfect performance because of this, but with the exception of the one literal frat boy, these people were all 30 when they made this movie. And so it's like, Jillian Bell's 1 year younger than Jonah Hill.
Oh, really?
And like, yeah, Kurt Russell's kid was like 2 years younger than that. It's like they're all solid millennials playing college kids in 2014. So 10 years late. And yikes. It makes it less funny, I think, than it would have if there were real children around them.
Yeah. Or does it?
Except
because
for,
Jonah does look considerably older than everybody else.
That's true. That's what happens when you lose weight.
Yeah.
Lose weight, gain wrinkles.
Aw.
Yeah, he and Seth Rogen both did that kind of yo-yo thing there for a few years. Mm-hmm. Does it? And I felt bad because it felt like they both lost a lot of weight, saw that they didn't look like people expected them to look anymore, and then put some of it back on, like, to fit. Right?
So, right.
Like, they probably put some of it back on because that is how dieting works.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Rather doesn't work.
But it felt weird. It felt like their weight loss was being rejected by society, which is like, that's odd.
Well, it is weird because sometimes you're like, what's his name? Randy Jackson from the American Idol. Whew, he lost all that weight. I'm like, who is this? What is wrong? And then, you know, most famously, Luther Vandross. Like, everybody's in two camps, fat Luther, skinny Luther. But it's, but y'all don't know nothing about that.
No, this is the first time I'm hearing about that.
Sorry.
That is where the cultural divide. All right. Yeah. Wrong podcast, wrong audience. But anyway, I had mentioned something about Peter Stormare, which...
Yes! Yes! Thank God. I was so worried we were going to forget.
It's not that great. It's more of like a tickle kind of a story. But anyway, so like my sister went on vacation in 2013 to Puerto Rico. Is that what she said? Because I actually had to ask her about this. Yes.
That's where they filmed the spring break.
Yeah. San Juan, Puerto Rico. And I get this text message from her with this blurry picture. And she's like, who is this person? He looks like a famous person. And I'm like, and it's like she's at a cafe or something like that. And I'm looking and I'm just dissecting. I'm trying to figure it out. And then, you know, later on that day, I was like, I don't know. I don't have no idea who this man is, who this person is. And then, like, she's like, oh, they're filming this movie here, blah, 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 with Channing Tatum in it. And it's like, and they asked us if we wanted to be extras. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's totally cool. But they were, like, leaving within several hours, and so they couldn't do it. And then I realized it was Peter Stormare that she had sent, like, after I Googled everything. It was Peter Stormare, which I love Peter Stormare, like, a lot. And I was so upset that I didn't recognize him in the photo, and I did not ask her. I would have told her to put me on the phone with him. Because it's just, like... fucking typical. Like, my sister, she cares nothing about movies, about any of it, none of it whatsoever, as she's like right smack dab in the middle of a 22 Jump Street filming and just like, meh.
That is adorable. Thank you for sharing that. I have genuine anxiety about running into a celebrity who someone else I know really cares about. Like, for example, Sean, if David Lynch and I just happened to be in the same coffee shop, what would I do? Mm-hmm. The answer is I would ignore him and then tell you. Probably I wouldn't even tell you. I don't know. Like, is there someone that you could have been at the same bar as that would make your sister feel the same way?
I was in that name? Bar with Aquaman, that one, Jason Momoa.
Wow.
and I was like, yeah, and I was like, oh, there's that guy. And I was like, there's probably a lot of people who would feel a lot differently about this.
Yeah, I think probably Jason Momoa would probably be one for my sister. Also, I guess a guy from, who is she really into? Like, some dude that was on, not Ugly Betty, Jane the Virgin. Like, if I were to, I guess the guy who played her dad, she really liked him. And if I were to, like, run into him, that would be a thing. And she would just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Like, she would fangirl fuck out.
I also love that you're her authority for who is this person who looks vaguely famous.
Right.
Wait to know your sister.
Exactly. It's like, had you taken a better photo, I probably could have got it.
Have I told you about John Green, the author, the Fault in Our Stars author?
I don't think so.
Maybe.
John Green is, lots of people already know who he is, because he is an incredibly successful author of Fault in Our Stars and other stuff like Fault in Our Stars. And he's like a, you know, big internet presence as well, to the point where, you know, he is kind of a worshipped celebrity over a certain subset of sensitive youth ages, like 20 to 28, I will say. Fault in Our Stars was filmed in Pittsburgh. I was doing a set visit. Someone introduced me to him. He kind of convinced me to interview him. Like, very politely, he was like, oh, you're from a magazine. Do you want to do an interview? I have time. Like, he was being so like, no, I'm giving you my time. And I was like, okay. And just riffed through like a Q&A with this person who at the time I was like, he's the guy that wrote the book. And then when I published the interview, people were like, oh my God, you met him and talked to him and just had a conversation? And I was like, yes. And I knew it was important as I was doing it.
I had that with Stephen Chbosky. Is that his name? With
Sure.
Who wrote, what is it? The Wallflowers book, which I had never heard of in my life until the movie started happening here. And
the Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yeah. And like, I found out, and apparently I guess it's just, you know, missed my generation or whatnot, how important this book was to like so many people around me and how much, you know, it meant to them and their lifestyle and, you know, their adolescence and all that stuff. And I was just like, hey, dude. And I just kind of was like talking to him for, it was like at the premiere or something. It was kind of like, oh, Yeah, there's so many more people that should have been in this in my place.
Right. John Green was very nice and thoughtful and very good at like launching into an interview and being genuine about it. And it was just like, listen, buddy, I'm sure you're very important, but like Laura Dern is right there. I can't. Like she's standing over there. Do you understand? Yeah. Anyway, what? 22 Jump Street. Right. Peter Stormare. That's how we got here.
Yes. Which I wouldn't be mad if he was in like every movie.
Yeah, he's always good.
The whole cast was good. I'm stunned at the number of like setups that worked, like because a lot of movies have like one or two little inventive things and they kind of work, and other than that it's a street movie. Everything here, I loved when they were listing the stuff in a dorm room. The twins bit kept working over and over again. My third favorite sequence is their trip when Channing Tatum has the happy trip and Jonah Hill does not. Oh.
Can you take me higher?
Creed's like, and maybe the best thing, I talked about other action comedies. For me, they whiff because they forget that the action is still supposed to be funny. I don't mean to single out Kevin Hart, but everything that Kevin Hart's in is a comedy, and then when they're in a car chase, they just play it as a straight action movie.
Right.
I don't care about the stakes of this goofy movie. You have to still make it funny. And all of the action sequences in this movie are still funny.
Oh my God.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, as they were calculating the cost of like the destruction. That was perfect. And like even like the fights, like the two fights that they were having, you know Jonah and Jillian, and then you've got Channing and his twins that he's fighting with, and then he ends up, the girl jumps on his shoulders and he uses her as a weapon.
I love that.
Oh, perfect.
Well, and the opening one where they're climbing on the truck, oh, and they God. End up hung from the, in a movie that I mostly forgot. I completely forgot that sequence.
Yeah.
And the octopus. And it was so funny.
Me too. I was very caught off guard. The octopus thing, I actually screamed.
That is the kind of thing that I just laugh so hard at. And then part of me is saying to myself, you're stupid. This is a dumb joke. Don't laugh at this. And then I'm like, nope. Gonna laugh.
Right. It's like it's ink is in my mouth. Like that.
It's the simplest joke in the world, but just to call back to it with, I understand they have a lot of arms. They have eight tentacles. It's like, you didn't even do anything. And it was hilarious.
Oh. Yeah, it's like Nick Offerman's entire monologue of like talking about how we're going to do the exact same thing and you're going to do this over. Just like that whole, just like from the very beginning, they're like calling out what a sequel to a comedy usually is. And I am here for it. Like, I love every bit of it.
Well, we are raving over this movie. The only thing that jumps out at me, other than that little recurring bit with Jonah Hill, as not working. Here's a soundtrack that didn't age. Like, immediately as soon as this music came on, I thought of Deadpool asking, is dubstep still a thing in the future? Because already this movie is 6 years old and 7 years old and feels incredibly dated because of the intense dubstep.
Yeah. There's a DJ at the spring break and he's wearing a Diplo shirt. Is that what a Diplo is?
Yeah, that was just that guy.
Because I've heard the name floating around, and I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I have no idea.
I'm like, isn't that the toddler version of Legos?
Yes, with the bunny rabbit. Yes.
We saw them. They came in at the end of the Lego movie, remember?
Right. Which is that's the same directors, right?
Yes. Yes. These are the Lego guys.
Oh.
I guess they should probably be the 21 Jump Street guys. I understand why Brie Larson was too busy to come back, but that's a shame.
Yes, she was busy getting an Oscar.
You know, yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Apparently there was some minor, like, tiny, tiny little Easter egg where they put his Facebook up on and he had, like, just liked a picture of her on his Facebook profile to, like, be a reference. But of all of the things that are referenced in this movie, couldn't you have explained why his girlfriend from the first movie is gone now?
And I guess another thing that's cute about this movie is that they let Jonah be the one to get the girls. You know, it's not like Channing.
Yeah.
He's not getting any ass really in either one of these films.
Do they ever establish his heterosexuality?
I don't know. Like, he gives that girl like a deep mouth kiss after after he like swats some twins with her. But yeah, I don't know if we ever really clear.
Was there a joke at the end that Kurt Russell's kid wanted him romantically?
It was like, it's a bunch of alluding. Like, they're doing a lot of double talk with a lot of things. Right. And he's just like, he's the one he deserves to be with or some shit, something like that.
But that can mean, is it bromance or romance?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It could be either way. It's like a lot of just the ridiculousness of as he's like, you gotta bust through the ceiling. We're gonna be in the annals of history. Like, what the
fuck? I wish y'all could see Camila's lewd hand gesture.
Because she loved recreating it. She really genuinely did. Let's rate it. I guess the only that I like, I have a ceiling because I'm like, yes, it's a comedy.
You're going to bust through the ceiling? Like,
and I'm going to bust through that ceiling. No, I'm not. It gets a 79. Robin?
So I started at 73 and then I subtracted 10 points for the improv slander. But then I added back.
They were really, you're really in your feelings about that.
Did I say 15? I'm not going to go as high as 78. I'm gonna go with 74 on this one.
Wow. You guys with your fucking artsy fartsy. 85. Fuck.
Good for
not
you.
Not that far off. Well, that lands on 79 and a third, just below that 80s threshold. Good. It does not push through the ceiling. But it's good. Good movie. We like it. So, do the bingo card. Camila, you are declaring your crush square crossed off.
Yeah, dude. Channing. I can't even. I can't even. I've tried for years to be like, he's just like, why? Why? But it's like, I can't help it. Every time he's on screen, no matter what, it's just like, yeah, yep, you can get it. Come on, let's.
The full package.
Toss me around. That's just all I need you to do.
I thought about the Sean Crush Square for Jillian Bell because she is lovely and hilarious. I don't think it quite raises to the level of a crush.
Yeah, it's like Channing, like, I mean, I'm sure he's, you know, as we were talking about the email, yes, I don't believe he's a very intelligent individual. But then again, I don't need him to speak a lot.
Right.
Just follow directions.
And dance.
Yes, dance. Dance!
I saw him do the terrible towel twirl at a Steeler game. What was he here filming?
I don't know.
If I knew that he was here filming something, you probably wouldn't be talking to me at this moment. That'd be...
Yeah.
Really some, like,
I mean, this is years ago. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's probably been some residuals of restraining orders and whatnot, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah, still be.
House arrest.
The thing I always say about Channing Tatum is that I'm really glad that when we lost Patrick Swayze, we had a backup.
Right?
When we lost Lindsay Lohan, we got Emma Stone to slide right in.
Right. She's like, I got it. I'm here. Don't worry, guys. Thanks, Chan.
Anything else on the bingo card?
Adapted from a TV show.
Yes.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, look at that.
Robin.
Give me a bingo.
I would like also first one. Robin, you mentioned Richard Grieco could still get it. Does that count as a crush?
Oh, I already crossed off crush for James Spader last.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Two, old age sucks. Like all the running gags. Hmm.
It's your square. Does this satisfy? I'm picturing, and it's not the years, it's the mileage. Like, I'm old and I'm busted down, not making fun of people in their third, who are younger than us for being old.
Yeah, but it's your call. When he said that.
It was more like an overall thing, like people making fun of folks, people making fun of older people or old age and all that stuff. And I think Channing even says, I'm getting too old for this.
He does several times. I think we should cross it off.
Yep, which also gives me a bingo.
All right.
And also gives me a bingo.
Oh,
that's a bingo.
Exciting. Thank you, 22.
The rare triple bingo. If you've been following along, that means that we have a shared veto. We are allowed to veto something, but we have to all agree to veto it.
We have it's to turn
not that
key.
Hard. There's a lot of shit we don't want to watch, but...
Nice.
And right. Robin and Camila still have individual vetoes and one shared. Good bingo card.
Yay.
So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. What did you watch last week?
I don't think I did. I watched anything. I started Malcolm and Marie, but haven't finished it yet.
I also started it, and I had to turn it off because I was too mad at Malcolm.
Well, yes.
I did see the TikTok guy who...
Yes!
Which is great.
Oh my God, so brilliant.
What is this TikTok?
Sean. I have to look.
It's Malcolm and Marie's neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah, he just like films it in black and white, and he's at the window. Just like as exactly what you would imagine, like our neighbor would be. It's like he is still out there hollering about Barry Jenkins.
So here's the thing about Malcolm and Marie. Again, it's like I haven't finished it. I watched about 45 minutes of it. I was annoyed with it while I was watching it for a couple reasons. The first being that Zendaya left her dress on for 41 minutes, which is not very realistic, in my opinion. The second being that I just think Malcolm is way too mean. And I feel like I had the same problem with Marriage Story, where it's like one of these people is empirically worse than the other. And so but the movie is asking me not to root for the other, for the nice one. Mm. So that is a problem for me. I did not know this while I was watching it, but I don't feel good about how this is written and directed by a white product of nepotism.
Mm. Of who? I didn't pay attention to who wrote it and directed it, really.
It's Sam Levinson, who's Barry Levinson's son.
That's right. Yeah.
I haven't watched enough to like really to get in on anything other than I will go ahead and comment about her keeping her dress on. Like there have been a couple times where I have been feeling myself after an event and I kept my outfit on a little bit longer than I should have.
Right.
But it's like, you know what? The shoes would have come off immediately once hitting the door, probably in the car. But the outfit, like if I was rocking that and feeling myself, I probably would have kept it on for 45
minutes. You know what? That is a fair point, especially in quarantine. Like I keep putting on dresses for things I don't need to put dresses on for. Also, that dress is beautiful, and I am desperate to know what color the fabric is.
It's gold in my mind.
It's also gold in my mind. I read a long interview with the costume designer that it did not mention the
damn
color,
it.
And I was like, ah.
Yeah, I was certainly surprised to find that the reaction has been mixed because I loved it so much. But, you know, it's going to hit different depending on how you feel about the characters. I would not be like, no, Malcolm is, I mean, you haven't seen the whole movie.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say like, he's a great guy. No, he's not. I think I generally care about that less. Again, I liked Marriage Story a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a lot of people are, you know, pointing out, yes, this is a privileged white director, and that makes the, you know, especially the rant about film criticism feel a little odd.
Right, and critics talking about movies talking about critics is just a mess that I'm done with. I was done with that when Birdman was going on. I think that my other limit with Malcolm and Marie is, and I felt the same way about Marriage Story, I feel very awkward about people writing what they know when it comes to things like this, because it's like, oh, you're working out your issues, right? Like if Malcolm were a scientist receiving an award and that they, you know, I'm married to a scientist, so maybe that's why I think that, but have him come back from some other great professional accomplishment. And I guess that there's a lot of stuff about, you know, exploiting your muse that wouldn't necessarily get to be explored there. But then I'm all the same problem with the whole exploiting your muse thing. Basically, what I'm saying is that if you're going to make a movie that is very transparently about your breakup, pretend that it's actually about environmentalism and or a biblical allegory. That is a mother joke.
And I hate mother.
And I love mother.
Go back, listen to every episode of this podcast, see which one of us, of me or Robin, you agree with more, and that's probably how you'll feel about Malcolm and Marie.
Yes, this podcast has a segment called Let's Talk About Mother Again.
So no recommendation will be made one way or another about Malcolm and Marie from either of you.
Not yet.
Yep. Mary Beth asked what I wanted for my birthday. All I said was, get me a Criterion Blu-ray, because I've been adding to my Criterion collection. And she was trying to find something that she didn't think I had seen. She succeeded. She knows I occasionally enjoy a David Cronenberg film, and I don't think she knows what it's about, but she got me a copy of Crash by David Cronenberg, the one about sex and car crashes. Whoa. I haven't seen it. I just don't think she knows. I mean, I barely know what I'm in for. I really think she doesn't know what she's in for when we fire that up.
Interesting. It's been ages since I've seen that movie.
I never saw it.
It sounds like something. I'm really pumped to have an excuse to see it, because when else was I going to be like, yeah, that one with all the gore and sex, that's the one for me right now. So
the car crash kink.
I will report back. In the meantime, Critics' Choice Award nominations are out. Spoiler, everyone got nominated. I'm not going to get into it, because I am proud to be a member of the Critics' Choice Association. I do think if you look at who gets Critics' Choice Awards, we generally do a good job of awarding great performances and great films. Just for some reason, they do this thing where there can be some things have 7 nominees, some things have 8 nominees. Is that motivated in part by getting famous people to show up at the ceremony? I don't know. Look the other way. Yay. But because nominees are out right now, I've started to go through just a couple of things that are nominated that I haven't seen, including the Guatemalan horror movie La Llorona, different from The Curse of La Llorona, that is also a Golden Globe nominee and could end up being an Oscar international film nominee, which would give Shudder its first Oscar nominee. I'm so pumped.
Wow.
That something that was bought domestically by Shudder and is officially a Shudder exclusive is getting all this awards attention. It's really good. It's not another version of Curse of La Llorona. It's a different take, a much different and very relevant take on that myth. And if you have Shudder, it is on there right now, and I recommend it. Also, I watched the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it holds up. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
I was like, it can't possibly be as good as I felt when I was 5. And no, it has some things that don't work, but it's funny and different, and it is like, you know, a gritty New York movie, and it's a little PG. Raphael says damn a lot. Ooh. You know, it's, if you have been thinking, should I revisit that? I think the answer is yes, even if April doesn't have the right color jumpsuit. Anything else? I don't want all the recommendations, but if you haven't seen it.
These aren't recommendations, but I do want to talk about the movies that I watched this weekend, because Colin and I did an On the Shelf film festival featuring The New Mutants. Boy, is that movie a mess. Did you ever see it?
I have not watched it. I wanted to, but then I kept hearing bad things about it. It wasn't like in post-production hell or something, like developers.
Yes.
It was like a whole thing.
Yes, both of the movies that we watched this weekend have been on the shelf since at least 2017. New Mutants just is so much talking. It's incredible. Like, I don't understand how it happened. Like, did they run out of money and that was all they could afford to film?
That's so messed up.
Yeah. Anyway, not even worth the $1.25 I spent on it for Redbox. And then the other thing I watched was The Empty Man, because one of my former improv teammates, Rob Kutz, stars in that film as The Empty Man. It's like the nun. He doesn't actually talk, but he's the menacing figure, which is so funny to me because Rob is like the sweetest, goofiest guy on the planet. And it was fun to watch and to, like, you know, point at the screen and say, that's Rob. The first 10 minutes of, if that ever shows up on Shudder, I highly recommend the first 10 minutes of it. It's genuinely terrifying and very atmospheric. And I was like, is this movie going to actually be good? And then the actual plot kicks in and it's boring and 15 million different things go on. It somehow ends up being about a cult. I fell asleep. Colin tried to explain the ending to me and I was like, it is not worth trying to understand this. Like,
I don't care.
Yes. So if that ever ends up on streaming, watch the prologue, then turn it off. That's my recommendation.
Wow.
Camila, anything else? Or
I watched the Britney Spears documentary.
Oh, me too. Free Britney.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, to sum it all up, y'all did her dirty. That's it. That's it's really good. I mean, and it's not like, it's like, what, an hour and a half or something? And it's the New York Times Presents, and it just talks about basically the whole legal rigmarole that she's going through with her dad about his conservatorship over her life and her estate and her person. And it's just like, it's crazy to me how this can happen to somebody and continue to happen to somebody, how easy it is for someone else to take charge of your life, and then how difficult it is for that person to prove, hey, I'm okay, give me my life back, give me back control. And it's just, it's really scary and just kind of fucked up. Like, you know, I don't have nearly the amount of money, like as much money as Britney does, and so therefore a lot less motivation for somebody to want to try to take over my life per se. But still, it's just like, really, it's scary, and I feel bad for her. And I hope she's seeking some sort of therapy, because I feel like there's still something not quite right with her.
And how can she be okay while she still has to live in this absurd situation? It's like a catch-22 for her.
Yeah, it's just, it's really, I mean, overall, it's sad, and it's scary, and I feel bad for her.
I got really emotional watching it, because it was like, you know, like I'm bipolar and I have mental health problems, and definitely thought about, you know, all the times in my life when I have been in crisis, if every camera in the world were pointed at me. That's a nightmare.
Even just like a bad day, just not even just like something serious, like you can't see your kids, like your ex is trying to keep your kids away from you. It's just like, you know, fuck, I'm just not feeling it today. And there's, and just like everybody's all up your ass trying to take your photo. And also, I don't think I gave her as much credit for it at the time, but she looked good with a shaved head. Like, she pulled it off well, I think.
Where is that available?
Hulu.
Britney Spears?
Hulu.
Oh, yeah. So, let's draw a movie.
Yay.
So, from this comedy sequel, we move on to... we land on Meet the Fockers. Not Meet the Parents, but Meet the Fockers. If we keep this, we will remain in a comedy sequel where we haven't rewatched the original run. This is the sequel with, I think, Dustin Hoffman and... Barbara Streisand show up.
Which is the thing that is stopping me from playing a veto.
Right.
I'm a little curious. As much as, you know, those bits were kind of written into the ground from the original... The original is a really funny movie, and I don't remember if the sequel is any good or not. I mean, I don't know if Meet the Fockers is going to move the listenership needle, but hey, this is this is the show. You know, sometimes it's Pretty in Pink and Taken and other things, the National Treasure. Everyone got excited about National Treasure, and occasionally we remind you that Ben Stiller movie had two sequels. It could be worse. We could have landed on Little Fockers, which I haven't seen and I assume cannot possibly be good.
That exists?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a third one.
Fucking hell.
I worked at the movie theater when this came out, and some people wouldn't say the title. Some people would say, I'd like two tickets for Meet the... You know, I'm not saying that. It's like, well, you're buying in to a certain degree.
What are you doing?
Fockers. It's different. Right. That's the whole joke. Before we get to that... 22 Jump Street was released June 13th, 2014. What was the number one song in America?
Taylor Swift.
Obligatory Drake guess.
Neither of those.
When did Call Me Maybe happen?
Ooh, interesting.
I should know. We just had a Carly Rae Jepsen week in Album Club. But that's not...
not this.
That is not this, no.
Sia. Meghan Trainor.
No, you're doing well to guess contemporary female artists, although this is less contemporary and more then, and probably won't be back.
I repeat, Katy Perry.
No, she endures.
Iggy Azalea?
Camila gets it. It is the... Better Left in the Past, Iggy Azalea.
Sweet. Well, what was her song?
Fancy?
Yeah.
Fancy.
All right.
Yes, let's be glad she's not around anymore. But it's like, we weren't here for you anyway. It had a really good hook. It was a Charlie XCX hook. That was this
video.
Yeah. You added nothing and got canceled for it anyway. So, good job. Good job with your entire life. Sorry.